Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. My guest today is Carolyn. Carolyn has had a lifetime of experiences with ETs, anomalous phenomena, MyLab type experiences, experiences that smack of deep black projects. So, without any further ado, Carolyn, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Hi, James. Thank you. I appreciate you inviting me on. I'm quite happy and excited to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I'm excited and happy for you to be here because you have a lot of insight. You've had a lifetime of experiences, and a lot of the stuff you pointed out to me jibes with a lot of the research I've done over the years. So I thought it would be beneficial to all people out there like us who've had similar experiences that to have you on and tell your story. Tell us a bit about your upbringing and your girlhood and anomalous phenomena that started creeping its way in your formative years.
I am 61 years old. I was born and raised in Central Texas. My dad was a command sergeant major at Fort Hood, Texas, while I was growing up. We lived about 1.5 to 2 miles from the front gate at Fort Hood. They call it Fort Cavazos now, but a petition was signed and now they're changing it back to Fort Hood. So I'm very excited about that. So I was born and raised in the house that I grew up in and really didn't leave home until I went to college. I traveled and I was there for my entire childhood, went through all the schools there and everything. So I would have to say that my first encounter with the phenomenon, and the phenomenon is all encompassing. But my first encounter with the phenomenon was in my bed at night, going to sleep. I didn't want to go to sleep, and I think, as best as I can recall, I think that I got in trouble for not going to sleep. And while I was just laying there in bed, the door to my bedroom was at the foot of my bed. My bed was in a corner. On the opposite wall was the window that looked out into the side yard of our house. The foot of my bed on the other side of the door was my closet door, but it was always closed. I always had it closed. I didn't like it open. So while I was laying in bed, just waiting to go to sleep or whatever I was doing, this apparition appeared, and it was solid. It was a what I interpreted to be a Spanish lady dressed in black lace from, I want to say, the 1800s, but which period of 1800s, I'm not sure. But she was walking from my window across my room and out my bedroom door as if she was in mourning. The black lace was sitting on top of some type of, the best way I can describe it is a tiara, where it hung over her face. She was dressed in all black, and it was as if she was in mourning, like she was walking in a funeral. It scared me. I called out to my parents. My dad came, and I told him what happened, and he's like, "There's nothing in here. There's no one in the hallway. You're fine. Go to sleep." That's my first recollection. My next recollection is being my parents' bed. It was a bad thunderstorm. I had crawled into bed in between them. At that time, my parents' bed was, the headboard was against the wall that faced the side yard, just like my window did. They had a window as well, and the headboard was up against this window. There was a bad storm, and I was laying on my right side. My mother was directly in front of me, laying on her right side as well. I was laying there, and there it was this thunderstorm, and I was awake and I was scared. And I had opened my eyes, and this seemingly, at the time, the only thing way I could describe it is a bolt of lightning comes through the window to and struck my mother in the back left scapula and was literally just hanging out there for a second. And it was lightning, I thought. But
Just to interject for a second, what's the scapula again?
like triangular flat bone on the in on your back where your shoulder meets. It's like the shoulder blade in the back.
Oh, okay. Please continue.
And it had struck her, and in hindsight, I don't know. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't lightning, but that's how it appeared because it was bright. I mean, this was like bright, brilliant light. And right after this light appeared, there was this biggest crack of thunder I had ever heard in my life at that point. And I screamed. It woke my mother up. She had pain in her left shoulder area, and it was the most bizarre thing ever. Then there were other things that occurred throughout living in the house. You would hear footsteps walking down the hall. And there was a big hallway that the bedrooms were off of. And this hallway started at bathroom at the end. You walk all the way down. All the bedrooms were on the left. The living room was on the right, separated by a door, and it ended in the dining room. And the dining room went out into the kitchen. So I would hear footsteps coming from my parents' master bedroom, which is at the front of the house, walking all the way down. But when I would look out, there would be nobody there. And this happened all throughout my teens. It was extremely prevalent during that time. When I was able to be left alone by myself while my parents went out to either to one of the department stores or to the grocery store or what have you, and I was able to stay at home alone by myself, I would sit in the living room watching TV. In the living room, on one wall, there was the door that leads into the hallway. And then there was a door on another wall that led into the kitchen dining room area. While I would be watching TV, I would see people pass by these open doors, and they were just looking in as curious bystanders. Oh, what is she doing? Type thing. They had never harmed me. But I would feel a little bit of fear because I just didn't know what their intentions were. And I would end up closing both doors and watch TV just so they wouldn't be a distraction. So that happened throughout my life while living there. I think the most significant aspect of the phenomenon showed itself in what I originally thought was a dream. I was around, I want to say 11 or 12. My oldest brother had moved off to college. He was engaged to his wife, and I was able to move into his bedroom because it was bigger. And so I moved into his bedroom, and one of the walls faced due west. It had a window, and the other wall faced the side yard, and it as well had a window. So I was able to have two windows. We had the, and this was back in the 70s, okay, mid 70s. We had these vinyl blinds, and that's all they were. They were flimsy vinyl. They had a rod on the end, and they had a spring at the top. And the spring controlled the tension on how high up you wanted the curtain, vinyl curtain, or how low you wanted it. At night, I would lower the curtain, but in the Texas summer, it's blazing hot in Central Texas. And with that window facing due west, the sun would literally not melt, but it would curl that vinyl shade. And so it would curl at the ends. So when you're looking at it, it's curling outward towards you. And I didn't like that because when the sun came through, when the light came through in the morning, I would wake up earlier and I just didn't like that. It was what it was, and I just had to just contend with it. Well, I went to bed one night and I was sleeping in my bed, and my bed, if I'm laying in my bed on my back, the side window was at my feet and the west window was on my right side. So and the door to my bedroom was on my immediate left. So when I was sleeping, I had this dream that I woke up in this dream and there was light, bright white light, similar to the light that hit my mother during this thunderstorm. But it was bright white. And I could see this light coming through the curled edges of the vinyl shade in the window. And it was getting brighter and brighter. And I looked, and it was one of those instant, I felt an instant familiarity of, oh my gosh, this is happening again. And I didn't want them to find me, whoever they were. I didn't want to be found. So what I ended up doing, I rolled out of bed. I did not swing my legs around to stand up. I literally rolled off the bed onto the floor. My door was open. I basically did the army crawl along the floor into the hallway, into the dining room. And when I was in the dining room, there is a window that also faces west, and it had wooden shutter blinds that you can control with a lever. The blinds were shut, but the light was coming through those slats as well. I ended up crawling across the dining room into the living room to hide. Now, at the time, my dad had this elaborate sound system set up. He developed his own surround sound in order to watch movies and things. But he had bought these 3-foot-high speakers that were, I guess, 1 foot by 1 foot, but 3 feet high. And he bought two of them. They were called Tobys, Toby, Toby speakers. And he had these two speakers set up on each side of the TV console. Well, there was this space between the console and the speaker. I crawled around to hide in between the speaker and the console and basically just shrunk myself into this little 1-foot square space, keeping myself under this 3-foot speaker. When I did this, off to my right, out of the living room windows, which faced east, I saw more lights coming through the window. And it was that at that moment, it was like, oh, they know where to find me. And that's the last I remember. For decades, I thought it was a dream. I honestly did. But when I had my awakening to what was really happening, this incident was one of my first thoughts of, I don't think this was a dream. So that was the most impactful moment of my childhood that I can remember.
Well, I'm just saying it's quite an impactful experience because you're doing the army crawl, you're trying to escape, but you black out and something may have happened, but please continue.
There's this story that my parents told me. When I was like 5 or 6, I got really mad at them and decided I was just going to run away. So I set out on foot, told him I'm running away. My mom was at work at the time. My dad was retired by this time. He was a stay-at-home dad at that time. And he was basically, okay, go, bye. And we lived across the street from one of the elementary schools. And I remember walking across the street, walking past the school, because on the other side of the school was a 7-Eleven, and I was going to walk to the 7-Eleven. Well, the story goes that when my dad lost sight of me on the other side of the school, he got in this car to come look for me, but he couldn't find me. I was nowhere. He calls the police do a search, and it was about an hour or two later they find me, but I was on the opposite side of the school in another part of the neighborhood, and they picked me up and brought me home. Now, I don't recall this at all. I remember walking to the 7-Eleven quite often. I remember walking one time when I got mad and it's like I'm running away, but I don't recall if it was the same incident. I don't remember the police picking me up. I don't remember them dropping me off. But my parents have told me this story throughout the years. Well, the funny thing about this is I had asked both my older brother and sister about this, if they remember this incident or remember our parents telling them about what had happened. Neither one of them have any recollection of this story at all. So, did it happen? I don't know. It would be nice. I'm sure there's some type of police report if it did happen. However, the chances of finding that are pretty slim, considering it was late 60s, early 70s. So that's all I have to go on. But I just find it interesting that they tell me this story, but my brother and sister don't remember it. So then that leads me to think, well, is this a remembered reality in another dimension? I don't know. So.
Thought. I mean, as a young boy, I was told, and I don't recall this either, that I used to go on these long walks to go visit my aunt, and I just up and leave and be gone for a while. But I, walk like miles to go to my aunt's house, and people thought it was normal back then. Of course, it's a different era nowadays.
Right.
People wouldn't dream of letting their kids out of their sight if they had any common sense anyway, or
Right.
aware of their surroundings and what have you. And a couple of points about your house there. It seems that there seems to be an interdimensional portal kind of time temporal aspect to it, because you're seeing apparitions from a different time, a different era, whether the time slips, the temporal time slips and apparitions is due to some kind of interdimensional vortex, or the place was scarred by some kind of deep trauma, like some kind of Manchi raid, and everybody was killed, or well, everyone except that woman in mourning dress, right? Because things like that
Right.
happened back in Texas. And also the thunderclaps that figures prominently in the UFO research. There's the famous case of Dr. X in France. He hears these loud thunderclaps in the middle of the night, and he lived up on a mountain, and the mountain overlooked a big, wide, deep valley. And so he hears these loud thunderclaps. He goes outside to investigate. Then he sees two huge flying saucers shooting big lightning flashes across the valley, and one of them actually hit him in the knee, where he'd injured himself when he was cutting firewood, right? Because he used to limp around a lot because of the firewood chopping incident. And it was a similar thing where he would see these lightning flashes emanating from these craft, accompanied by these loud thunderclaps. And then suddenly, if memory serves, the two huge flying discs suddenly merged into one. And he was all agitated about it. He was telling people about it. And someone said, "Look, look at your leg." He was pacing back and forth in a high state of anxiety, and he didn't even realize he was limping anymore until someone pointed out to him. And then in the Betty Andreessen case, she was taken to a lake on board a flying saucer. The Greys, at least they appeared to be Greys, number of factions of them, I do believe, and the craft she was taken in had to undergo some kind of maintenance, and it kept making these loud cracking type noises. And she asked one of the ETs what's going on. And one of the ETs told her that the craft is undergoing a quote transversal shock unquote. Now, an aerospace consultant from MUFON said, "We've never heard that term, transversal shock. It probably means something to the aliens, but it doesn't mean anything to us." And I've had
Right.
these mysterious lightning flashes too, where I was on top of a mountain in the south, is it the south end? Yes, of the Jenolan Caves in the Blue Mountains of New South Wales, south end or north end, I can't remember. But anyway, the Jenolan Caves is an underground tourist attraction, and the tunnels just extend for miles. They haven't even been fully explored. They've only explored a fraction of the tunnels, and they take tour groups down there. And I'd done the tour group experience, and I was staying at the time at a cabin at the top of this mountain in the Blue Mountains. And it was so cold that weekend, I remember. And we started seeing these lightning flashes right outside the window. In fact, there was a gnarly tree outside. It was so cold that the leaves had come off. And this lightning discharge, an electrostatic discharge, would come down and illuminate the trees that didn't have any leaves on it. And you know, in the old days, there was always a fractional time lag of seconds between the thunder, either the lightning discharge and a thunderclap, right?
Right.
And, but with UFOs and alien craft, all that goes out the window because I'm in that cold cabin looking out the window and I'm seeing these lightning flashes right outside the window. Not accompanied by a thunderclap. I go, well, that's interesting. Next thing you know, there was a power outage and the whole house was cast into darkness. And I intuitively felt that there was some big craft right above the house atop that mountain. I don't recall missing time or anything, but the point of relevance is, you know, you talk about the lightning flashes, you talk about the thunderclaps. I'm not saying it's the case, but it's very reminiscent of UFO reports in the past, like
Right.
I just mentioned, and also about where you lived, there by Killeen, Texas. Killeen, Texas, for many years, which is adjacent to Fort Hood. I'm glad they renamed it Fort Hood. Not that General John Bell Hood was a good general, he was a Confederate general, but at least they named it after,
Right.
you know, just whatever DEI name they gave it afterwards. I'm glad they switched it back. But anyway, Killeen Base for many years was a repository for nuclear weapons. It was one of three places in America initially that had been set up as a depot for nuclear weapons. So there would have been high security, deep black elements of security there, Atomic Energy Commission, what later became the Defense Special Weapons Agency, Defense Nuclear Agency, that all would have been there, as well as whatever was on the base at the time. They've had special forces there. And for many years, also, probably still the same, Fort Hood was one of the main Army bases where they had tanks and tank armored formations. And it's possible, I think you mentioned your dad was involved in armored
Yes.
regiment or
Yes.
something. Okay.
Yeah, he was in the second armor division.
Yeah, that was a Patton called that the Hell on Wheels division. It took part in the
Yep.
invasion of Sicily and also was in the
Yeah.
European theater of operations. But anyway, please continue.
So this continued up until I moved out. The house remained in the family up until around 2010. Then it switched ownership, and I don't go back to Killeen very often. But when I do, I go by just to, just to reminisce and see how much things have changed and things like that. But we did move. I did move back into the house several times. My dad had died. I had gotten career promotions, better jobs, everything, and one of them brought me back to Killeen. And I lived with my mom for, oh, probably right about a year. And I don't recall any paranormal happening, but I'm sure it did. There was a lot, quite a lot of paranormal that went on in the house. There really truly was. Then I moved out and I met my future husband. He was stationed at Fort Hood. We end up living together. He ends up getting deployed during Operation Iraqi Freedom. When he comes back, by this time, my mom was terminally ill. She ends up passing away. My sister at that time was living with my mom, taking care of her. And we had decided to take over the house, my husband and I. So we moved into the house first night there. Now, mind you, all of this paranormal stuff was normal to me. Okay. Was it annoying at times? Yes, but the paranormal stuff was just part of the house, and I accepted that, and I just, dealt with it. First night that we were in the house, our bed wasn't set up yet, so we had our mattress and box spring on the floor in the living room. And first night there, I'm exhausted and asleep, and he wakes up the next morning and goes, "You didn't tell me this house was haunted." And I was like, I started laughing. Oh my God, I forgot to tell you. It didn't even dawn on me, honestly. And I was like, oh, okay, what happened? And he said that he woke up during the night and there was this white apparition standing in the doorway that led from the living room into the hallway to the bedrooms. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, it's probably my dad or my mom just looking out, seeing what we were doing. And he's like, oh, man. So we live in the house a few years. He did confess to me that on a few occasions, because we moved into the master bedroom. And in the master bedroom, when my parents were still alive, my dad had built these handmade bookshelves with long planks of wood and metal rods you screw, shelving rods that you screw into the wall with the adjustable brackets. And he had base all along the top, across the top at the ceiling, he had a plethora of books. When you walked into the bed master bedroom, there was a space there, and he had three or four shelves there filled with World War II and Russian books on communism and World War II and everything. Because my dad was a POW in the Battle of the Bulge in World War II. So he had an enormous amount of Russian communist books, a lot of books on China, and a lot of books on World War II. So we kept the books there because we didn't want to get rid of them yet. Because we wanted to go through them and see what was actually that we could sell on eBay or just donate to the library or reading place. So one night, apparently, my husband had woken up and he was facing the door, and he said that there was this man standing there looking at the books, taking his pointer finger and running them along the book titles. Just looking as if he was perusing for a title to for a book. I asked him to describe him, and it's as far as I could tell, it sounded like my dad. And it's like, oh no, that was my dad. He's just coming to look at his books. It's nothing. Another night, we had this over the door rack where you could hang clothes for drying, and I had a dress hanging up there that was air drying. It couldn't be dried in the dryer; it had to hang dry. And he said another night a woman was admiring the dress. I don't know who that woman was. I couldn't tell from his description. Because I asked him, I said, "Well, what did you do?" He goes, "I just closed my eyes. I didn't move. I didn't want them to know that I was looking at them." I was like, "Oh, okay." So just little things like that. We end up moving out of the house. It changes ownership. And we move up here to the Dallas area because he gets stationed up here at JRB Carswell. By this time, he was in the Army Reserves, but he worked for Department of Defense Army and got a job up here as well. So we've been here ever since, and We haven't had hardly any paranormal since that time. But throughout my life, I would have different things happen to me specifically that I couldn't explain, such as when my daughter was born, while she was growing up, I would hear knocking at the door. And I'm thinking that it's her. I would go and open the door. It's not her. There's no one there, in fact. This happened on quite a few occasions, and it still does to this day. I'm thinking it's one of my grandkids on the door, knocking on the door, but there's no one there. And by now I know there's no one there. I would also get nosebleeds. I would have these insane nightmares. And in looking back at these nightmares, while they were nightmares, I don't think they were actually dream nightmares, if you know what I mean. I think they were actual either virtual reality scenarios or actual abduction encounters, physical abduction encounters. But it was terrifying. But I would also dream that I was pregnant. It would freak me out. And then I would wake up not pregnant. So, from this dream, and I'm not pregnant. So just little things like that over the years, unexplained bruising.
Bit about those dream nightmares.
Specifically, they were in relation to now I have to say this because it was about the time that Jurassic Park had come out, but I hadn't even seen Jurassic Park at this time, just the trailers. But occasionally I would have these dreams where I am literally dropped into a jungle. I just wake up and I'm falling into this jungle with tropical foliage and everything. And I'm standing there, and all of a sudden I hear this dinosaur roar, and it was a T-Rex, and I'm actually being chased by this T-Rex, and I'm scared half out of my wits. I'm running for my life through this jungle. I have no way of knowing where I'm going. Right when I'm like literally fixing to be eaten is when I wake up, and I'm in a sweat and everything. This happened, like, I want to say maybe at least a dozen times. And then they stopped. Just all of a sudden they stopped. So it was pretty much those types of dreams. Could it have been influenced by Jurassic Park? Absolutely. I don't discount that, how everyday life can, show up in your dreams and stuff. We all work through stuff in our real life through our dreams. I get that. This was something so different, fantastically real. And that's the only way I can describe it. It was just different.
When these dreams would start, would you float down slowly and land on your feet into the jungle?
No, it was when I became aware, I had already, quote unquote, landed, but I knew I had landed. For lack of a better term, that's the only way I could describe it. I wasn't floating. I wasn't dropped per se. I've been dropped, so it didn't feel like that or anything. It was just I know that I had already landed and had conscious recall right then. Boom, landed, conscious recall.
The sensation, the feeling sometimes, oh no, not here again.
Pretty much. I mean, it's just this abject fear. The fear factor was so intense. And I've only had one other fear factor like that since then. And that was last summer. This abject fear. At the time, I had attributed it to some medication that I was on for an autoimmune condition that I had developed. Looking back in hindsight, I think this medication enhanced that encounter. That virtual reality or whatever it was enhanced
Brainwave
it.
state or a state of being that made it more conducive somehow for you to be
Yes.
put into those states. I've heard of similar things where one gal I knew, she already had the ethereal third eye vision and could see the entities overshadowing the host human. So when she took this particular pharmaceutical. I don't know why she was prescribed it or whatever, but then it became more extreme. Then she began seeing reptilians sauntering down her hallways, right? So some of these pharmaceuticals absolutely can plug us into some of these nether realms, so to speak, and put us into a state of being, a state of consciousness conducive to these kinds of experiences. And I don't think that's an accident, actually.
I honestly believe that because this was just so intense. There's really no way to describe the intensity of it, to be honest. And I literally attributed it to this medication. Once I was able to stop this medication, they went away. And the last time I would have to look in my journal to see the last time I had one of those. And I think it was back the first part of my awakening awareness of my discovery of what was going on. I think it was during that time, but I haven't had any dinosaur quote dreams encounters like that since.
What were the
So
circumstances that led up to you being prescribed that in the first place?
I had developed this autoimmune condition that was pretty new at the time. And this was in the early 90s. And I was having a really, really hard time. I had gotten really, really sick in 1992. I was having these symptoms, couldn't sleep, went to an infectious disease specialist. He couldn't help me. So I ended up, at the time, I was working for some medical doctors, and they were seeing how sick I was and how I was declining. One of them took it upon himself to do a little bit of research, comes back one day and says, "I think I know your problem," and ends up sending me to the rheumatologist upstairs. I go to the rheumatologist. Well, I didn't have that autoimmune condition that the doctor I worked for thought I had. Instead, I had this new, little known research autoimmune condition called fibromyalgia.
Which is very common amongst a certain demographic of female abductees in my lab. So please continue.
Yes, that is correct. I was prescribed antipsychotic antidepressant medication. It's called Elavil. The generic term is amitriptyline. I was taking the amitriptyline, a very small dose at night, so I could sleep because I wasn't sleeping. I was waking up every single night at 3 in the morning, and I would be up for the entire day. I would go back to sleep at 9 at night, and I would be up again at 3. It was this vicious cycle, and I was in so much pain, and I couldn't function. I mean, it was affecting my job. It was affecting how I was raising my daughter. I mean, it affected my entire life. The rheumatologist prescribed amitriptyline to get me into that stage 4 deep sleep, so my body could start repairing itself. It worked. I did get better. I really did. I really did get better. But the side effect was all of these quote unquote nightmares. After a few years, I stopped taking it. It was to the point where the rheumatologist kept wanting to increase the dosage, and it was, "No, I can't do that. I cannot function. I just cannot function during the day. I am like a freaking zombie." And so I ended up just stopped taking it altogether. By this time, I was having another illness episode. And by this time, it was 1996, there was something really, really wrong. I really thought that I was bipolar. And I went to the doctor, come to find out, I had a second autoimmune disease. I have Hashimoto's thyroiditis. Hashimoto's and fibromyalgia go hand in hand. Well, Hashimoto's and fibromyalgia are also quite common amongst female abductees. There I am. Now I'm on thyroid medication for the rest of my life. Now I'm much better with my fibromyalgia. At that time, it wasn't completely under control or in remission, but is managing it better. Then I fast forward to 2010, When we move up here to Dallas, I notice that I think I have something else going on as well. And I go to the doctor and I ask for this called an ANA titer to measure the antibodies in your system. And if it's positive, it has a pattern to it. A positive result means that you have antibodies in your system that are attacking your body. And that's what's happening to my thyroid. I have these antibodies literally attacking my thyroid and killing it off slowly, killing off the good cells. So I thought at the time when I asked for this ANA titer and ANA panel, if your titer is positive and you have this panel done, it's a test of like 30 or 40 panels as to what the antibodies are attacking. This is how people discover that they have lupus as well. So, this panel, now the doctor thought that I didn't know what I was talking about. And I pushed and I pushed and I pushed, and he eventually ordered it. And I said, look, I know something is going on. Something is not right. I know I have fibro and I know I have Hashimoto's, but there's something else going on. Something is just not right. He didn't want to order it. And it's like, if you don't order it, I'm just going to go somewhere else. So he ends up ordering it begrudgingly, mind you. About 10 days goes by and he calls me back and he's groveling, eating crow, saying, I just want to call and let you know personally that I am very sorry. You were absolutely right. Your panel shows that you now have Sjögren's syndrome and mixed connective tissue disorder. And it's like, well, I already knew about the MCTD. And I said, okay, I thought maybe it was Sjögren's, but I wasn't sure. Thank you very much. Needless to say, I never went to see him again. But I went to a different rheumatologist. Now that's three autoimmune conditions. And so I'm just rocking along, managing all of these AI diseases. And then I come to my discovery and awareness. And during that process, I discover that more often than not, abductees have one or more autoimmune conditions. What are the freaking odds,
It's not
right?
surprising considering how often, and Dr. Carla Turner talked about a lot about this, as did Barbara Bartholik, the frequency with which the alien medical staff, let's say, they inject us with these mysterious fluids. And there's also perhaps a bio war aspect to it. One of my friends, Charlotte Boudreau, she since passed away. Under mysterious circumstances, she was an abductee into my lab, a close friend of mine, and Evie Lorgan and Barbara Bartholik. She'd spent 10 years in cancer research, and she was a dermatologist. So, of all people that these aliens and the military as well were experimenting on, it was her. And so, she was able to give, from her perspective, a clinical diagnosis of what she thought was going on with her. She used to wake up and would find a fresh rectangular patch of new skin grafted on different parts of her body. And
Oh dear.
she would also find, you know, how prior to surgery, someone comes along, an intern or a nurse comes along with a grease pen and they draw out where the incisions are. They did that in the old days. I don't know about now, but
Oh yes, uh-huh.
they would draw out on a person's body where the incisions and work would be performed. Well, that would happen to her. Not only that, but she would wake up with symbols on her body, right? So point being is that she was convinced they were infecting her with different kinds of microbes and pathogens, oftentimes of an alien nature, to see how her body reacted, if her body would reject it or not. They basically used her as a guinea pig, and she suffered terribly and then died under mysterious circumstances. You know, the one thing about the dinosaurs you talked about also reminds me of a friend of mine, Pam Hamilton. As a young girl, she would see cast onto her bedroom wall these images of dinosaurs. It was almost as if they'd, like an object lesson of some kind. They would show like a movie cast onto her bedroom wall of dinosaurs and prehistoric jungles and dinosaurs fighting and eating other dinosaurs. And it was all very traumatizing for her. I remember I was obsessed, as was many boys, with dinosaurs. In fact, shortly after I learned how to read, that's all I would do is get books about dinosaurs, to the point when we were living in Texas, Corpus Christi at the time, there was a, remember those old-fashioned bookmobiles, right? They come around neighborhoods. Well, I cleaned them out of dinosaur books, and finally, one fine day, the bookmobile comes by. I go, "You have any more books about dinosaurs? Sorry, kid, you've read them all." Okay, so crestfallen, right? Well, anyhow, we reached the end of a fascinating first half with our guest, Carolyn. And Carolyn, if any members of our audience would like to contact you, you don't have to do this. They could be routed through me, or if you have an email that you would like to provide, it's perfectly fine if you don't. It's up to you.
Oh, sure. No problem. My email is hikingabductee at proton.me. And I'm also quite active on Twitter slash X. And my handle is at hikingabductee.
Yes, and we're just getting started. We got so much to share because I want to delve into your journals because there's so much information there. They come forth in the form of dreams, but a lot of it smacks of like ET MyLab type activity. So anyhow, we reached the end of the first segment with our guest, Carolyn. If you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.